Take a trip with us to Nilbog. Just promise not to drink the goo. If you get sucked into the Matrix, we will send a phone for you.
Do you believe in fate?
But every movie has a plot hole, and every hole gets filled somehow. Whiskey, wine, or blue milk, just don't cut me off right now. We're the Plotaholics, a breakfast club of two. We're the Plotaholics, ripping plots apart for you.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Plotaholics podcast. I am Shane Wilson, and I'm joined, as always, by the only man that I will do assigned homework over the summer for, Brian Tan.
I love it. Heyo, how's it going, everybody? Shane, how are you? What's up, man?
You know, I'm doing okay. My folks came by for a few days.
Oh, nice.
So that was nice. We took in a minor league baseball game, and you know, it was good to see the old Wilson clan.
Nice.
So yeah, and I mean, honestly, other than that, I've just been watching The Longest Yard, and you know, it's interesting because the remake was made in 2005, which was right around the time that we got that Bad News Bears remake. And we talked about, when we talked about Bad News Bears, how there was a moment where the remakes just were almost shot for shot the original,
the same thing.
And this one is definitely in that school of thought for remakes. It's not exactly
kind of
shot for shot, but it is really pretty close.
I was ready to come swinging to protect it. It's close-ish, and it's almost like this movie is a love letter to the original.
Yeah.
But there are so many aspects where I had a lot more fun with the remake than the original.
I agree completely. And I felt like the original was, and again, this could be just our, you know, post-2000 sensibility kicking in, but the original just felt overlong. It took so long to get where it was going. And again, it honestly isn't that much longer. It's only longer by like 5 minutes, but it just felt much longer.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is, well, the original, it tries to be a comedy, but it's more of a dramedy.
Well, it also is much more of a prison movie than the remake. The remake is a football movie.
Right, with that just happens to be in prison.
Right.
Where the original is a prison movie. And there's a lot more, I don't want to say there's a lot more characterization, but it's almost like they got a lot more done with the remake.
I agree with that. Yeah. And there's, I would argue that the important stuff from the original makes it into the remake. One of the things that I found myself really bogged down with the original was that some of the bits just went on too long. Like when they were trying to be funny, some of that stuff just drug on. I'm thinking, of course, of the "let me pour mud in your boots" scene.
Yeah, that got on my nerves because it's like,
well, and also,
I'm telling Sharon,
all that forced laughter, it just wasn't that funny.
Right. And I'm telling Sharon, why is he even standing there to let him pour mud in his boots or down his pants? Like, why are you just standing there?
Yeah, you know it's coming. Like, he's telegraphing it all the way. He's not being sneaky about it. And then there's just the raucous laughter at just the least funny thing.
Yeah, it was.
But that's a very 70s kind of laughter. You know, everything was just way over the top. And that laughter kind of happened two or three times in the movie where everybody was just like, just, you know, guffawing it up over there.
Hugger yeah, chucks. Just gaff on for no good reason.
Yeah.
But there was also some aspects of the movie, of the original, that the remake did, but did it in a much better way. Case in point, well, first of all, I guess before we get too deep into this, want to say make sure you guys hit that subscribe button, like, subscribe, leave a reviews, tell your friends, because, well, we want to continue to grow. And make sure you go to plotaholics.com to get all of our content and visit our store. I know I haven't brought that up in a while, but
yeah. Also, follow us on Twitter. We currently don't know how to tweet. We've been locked out of that account. So, but yeah, if you follow us now, you'll be first in line for that fresh, hot Twitter account whenever it starts just tweeting. You'll get those tweets right off the assembly line.
There you go.
Also, before we go too far into this, just a quick summary for those who are uninitiated. The Longest Yard, obviously, is a movie about a sadistic warden who asks a former pro quarterback, now serving time in prison, to put together a team of inmates to take on and theoretically get pummeled by the guards. That paraphrased mostly word for word from the Internet Movie Database.
Yeah, gotta love it. Gotta love it.
I would say that I think that where I'd like to start is in the differences in our two Paul Crews.
All right. I think that one of the biggest differences, and this was something that I was getting ready to bring up before I, you know, sort of paused for, you know, identification.
Yeah.
Is I was asking Sharon, because we watched the original first. And of course, the domestic violence is far more physical in the original.
Yeah.
In the remake, it's all verbal.
It's also a little more mutual. I don't know that
yeah,
you picked up, like, they were a little rough to each other in the...
Oh my God. Paul and his girl, like the Burt Reynolds Paul crew, who will now be referred to as OG crew.
OG crew, yes.
Yeah, OG crew and OG girlfriend, they were beating the hell out of each other.
Yeah, but it was rough to watch that scene.
It was, because, and I even asked Sharon, I said, who do you think's the bad guy here? And she goes, they both are. Like, yeah, they're both horrible to each
but
other.
But he's terrible. And this was a conversation that Michelle and I had as well as we watched this. And I think it's one of the things that the remake does well. It makes Paul Crewe much more
likable,
redeemable. And
yeah,
and what I mean by that is that Paul Crewe in the original OG Crewe, as it were, is a terrible person, and it's much harder to redeem a bad person than it is a decent person with bad characteristics.
Right. And because the thing is, the New School Crewe, the Adam Sandler Paul Crewe,
yeah,
he's taking the suspension and everything, like his banning, and he's just like becoming very self-destructive and miserable, where where OG Paul Crewe is really just self-hate directed at the world.
Yeah, I have very little patience for characters that live with a chip on their shoulder like that OG Crewe does. Like just angry at everybody for everything that you did to yourself. And that's definitely how he comes across. He's not likable. And I don't even really think that he earns his redemption here. Like, he doesn't have a big change of heart. Like, he had so far to come, and they didn't really show him coming that far.
No. I mean, the only thing it really did was, I think the only time he really shows a redemptive quality is when he, you know, he asks the team manager, you know, when you clocked the warden, was it worth it? And then he decided, you know what? I'm just going to go out there and play my game.
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to the way, it's very similar to the change of heart, quote unquote, that we get in Bad News Bears, right? Where, you know, in Bad News Bears, you have a coach who starts pushing the players too hard and realizes that he's kind of taken the fun out of the game. And so he changes the way that he coaches. In this, you see somebody who sort of, you know, Paul Crewe was banned from the NFL because he was he's caught point shaving or fixing games against betting spreads, right? Mm-hmm. And essentially does the same thing in the game with the guards, where he makes an agreement with the warden in order to, not increase his prison sentence. But right. when he because goes out there,
because he was going to be framed for the murder of his friend.
Right. And but then when he gets out there and he sees how bad things are going, he has a change of heart and decides to come in. And he does have to re-earn the respect of his teammates, which is a great scene. But in both cases, Bad News Bears and The Longest Yard, I feel like those redemption moments were better, were strongly earned and were better presented.
Right. No, I think you're absolutely right. And I really feel like, at least like with the New School crew, he really kind of, his redemptive arc is even more earned because he opens up to his team. He goes, you know, hey, you guys already knew this about me, but I did fix it. I got, you know, he explains himself, something that he had never done. He didn't even do it for a caretaker, Chris Rock's character.
Right.
When he asked him blatantly. And I think in a lot of way, now the one thing that I will say is that the 70s were a different time and men didn't do a lot of that.
Yeah. And I'll say this, most of the reviews of the original that are favorable talk about how it's edgier and all of this stuff. And to me, it just is, it just feels like such an artifact. It doesn't feel edgy necessarily.
It's a product of its time.
Yeah. I mean, if every movie was doing that at the time, then I don't think that's edgy. That's just the culture.
Right. And now, I guess when they call it edgy, I guess they're looking to make the comparison between the two, because a lot of the complaint that I heard about the New School Longest Yard back when it first came out is that a lot of folks said that it feels so watered down. And
I think that part of it might be that it is without doubt much more sleeker, right? Like
it's a much more sleek movie. It's also a more inclusive movie in some ways.
It's not without its problems.
Not. Every Adam Sandler movie, for as good or terrible as they are, they all have good points and bad points.
Yeah, here I think the biggest issue is with its depiction of homosexuality and that sort of stuff, right? But outside of the issues with that, like I'm thinking of the gay player and the cheerleaders, right? Those are played for laughs a little bit more than I think I'd like for them to be. But outside of that, I think you're right. I think it's a little bit more inclusive.
Yeah, because there's a lot less. It's almost like there's more, like at least the depiction of the homosexual characters, it's more, and I guess in a lot of ways accepted. It's not glossed over. It's not sort of shied away from, you know, because like the cheerleaders in the New School, they were pretty funny. And I really, really enjoyed what they brought to the table. They really added the comedy where they weren't even really featured that much in the original. They were just there at the end.
Yeah.
And Tracy Morgan is always so much fun.
Yeah. I don't think that the way that the cheerleaders were depicted was necessarily disrespectful. It was the way that the revelation that the one guy was gay, like it was that it was such a.
With Brucey.
And I understand also that prison culture, et cetera, you know, and we can get into more of that because I think that both films do a decent job of showing sort of the breakdowns of the groups. Mm-hmm. And the cliques or the gangs as it were, right?
I think
especially the racial especially the racial stratification, right and tribe is probably a better word for that, because they don't get into the gang life like we got in Blood In Blood Out or anything like that, but you know, whenever they start talking about recruiting players, he eventually in both films he has to go to the basketball court to talk to the black players.
Right.
And the black players make it clear that, like, you know, he's not welcome there on that court.
And I think a lot of it, though, is because both caretakers the dad from Teen Wolf and Chris Rock make it be known that the reason why he's not welcome is because of the point shaving. You know, one guy said, you know, you can steal your mom's pension. That's fine. Well, we wouldn't care. Yeah, but shaving football scores, that's just un-American.
Right. Especially because like they're in the original, they're in Florida.
Right. And Florida's, well, both movies take place in very football heavy states, Texas, Florida and right? Texas.
Yeah. And I feel like especially now, Texas, especially, you don't want to be cheating in their football.
No, you don't, because
so the original I think feels edgier or feels more I don't know what the right word is, rough around
it's the more gritty. It's more gritty.
Gritty
it's
is the word.
And a lot of 70s films had that. A lot of 70s films felt that way.
But I think that's just a byproduct of the time.
Well, the Godfather films, the two Godfather films made in the 70s never felt gritty. They just feel like the Godfather. They don't have that same grittiness.
That's fair, but the Godfather is like a crime drama, right? And when it comes to filming sports, we've gotten a lot better at filming sports just in general, right? Like even filming live, real life sports, we've gotten better at filming them. And so when it comes to the third act of both films, the new one just looks better and it's easier to watch it. It's sleeker, et cetera, et cetera. But because of that, you lose a lot of those like wide angle shots, because the original felt like you were just watching a game on television instead of watching a movie, right? I think that maybe that's where some of that comes from, because it felt like you were just watching the footage from the camera in the stands
from like the old NFL films.
Yeah, well, and that's fine, because that's all that they really could do at that point, or that's all they had figured out how to do at least.
Well, 70s films also, and we ran into this with Freaky Friday in a lot of ways, with the camera angle choices. You know, you're gonna get more of that because that was an experimental time. They were getting these new technologies that they didn't have in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. So like, even in the sense where, is Paul Crew gonna get into the end zone and we have to show five different camera angle reactions before we get it.
Additionally, just also the idea that you would have a camera like running through the trenches with these players, like that almost like first person POV, the handheld camera feel, right? That you get in Friday Night Lights and things like very new movies.
Right.
It's just not something they would never put a camera that close to these bodies banging against each other.
No, they wouldn't.
And so there's a little bit, I think, lost there, but it also makes the film feel, like you say, a little bit grittier.
Right. But I mean, but there's so many films in this era that look like this. I mean, you look you look at Taxi Driver, you even look at some of the films of the early 80s. One of our favorite films, Sleepaway Camp.
Yeah.
Kind of gets that sort of grit feeling as well.
Yeah.
And that doesn't make it a bad thing.
Oh,
it's
for sure. Just, I think that for me, it just starts to wear on me when such a large focus of the film is a single game and we are sort of stuck in that film mode for like 30 or 40 minutes. That starts to get a little visually stale.
No, I can understand that. And I also think that when it comes to the OG Longest Yard, a lot of the players, like, we're supposed to be rooting for the Mean Machine, right? Mm-hmm. But the original film really does a good job at keeping us remembering these are, they're not good guys. They're villain. It's just that we're rooting for which villain we despise the least.
Well, right. Yeah, exactly. And I think in the remake, they do a better job of humanizing the prisoners.
And, right.
And as you humanize one population, you further demonize the other. I think the guards in the original are way worse than the guards in the new one, but the guards in the new one felt worse because the prisoners were more humanized.
Right. Well, not only that, but then you also got, and I'm going to tell you right now, my unsung hero of this film is without a doubt, Big Sexy himself, Kevin Nash, as Englehart. He's the one that, for those that watched, Goldberg and the other cons switched his steroids out with estrogen pills.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, are you crying? No, I've been having hot flashes all shift, and my nipples are really sensitive. And Bill Romanowski just looks up, why are we talking about your nipples?
I'll tell you, man, Bill Goldberg is such a beast.
He is, man. I love the fact that I love the scene where he's sitting there taking the shower and he's just all chill about being naked. And they're just like trying not to look, but they're looking.
They're like, did you feel the hammer? He's like, I think I felt it on my leg.
He was like, so catch Canara's a quarterback? You mean I get to hit him or hit him with that hammer? I want to hurt him, not kill him. Wow.
Oh, man.
Goldberg, and even still, Goldberg just sitting there. He comes in, he drills Adam Sandler. He's like, yeah, sack your ass.
Also, there are just a few lines that like absolutely make me like laugh every time, right? And I think that I'm going to try to play one here.
Okay.
You all right? You breathing?
I got a bird. His name is Ronnie.
Well, tell Ronnie you got knocked the fuck out.
Like, that one makes me laugh every time, and I don't
every
know why.
Time I guess Bruce is on screen, I laugh
for
my
sure.
Ass
yeah,
off.
And that's it. Like the prisoners here are just funnier.
They really are. They truly are.
But that's what you get when you hire comedians, right? Like Burt Reynolds is not a comedian.
No, and most of the guys, like, here's one thing. Here's a big issue that I had in the original compared to the remake. The Connie, the character Connie, the one that the great Khali, the wrestler, the great Khali's character Turley is based on this character Connie. And he's like, oh, he killed five people with his bare hands and another bunch when he got in here. Yeah, that karate shit's dangerous. Oh, this was before he learned karate. But he's doing a white belt's kata. That kata that he's doing is in different forms of martial arts. It has different names. Pinyon One in Kenpo, it's referred to as Young Ilbu in Tang Sudo. I learned this kata in two different martial arts styles. Both are the most basic white belt kata ever. And it just goes to show in the 70s, if you had any sort of athleticism where you could kick and look good doing it, you were automatically, people were automatically afraid of you because you were an expert at martial arts. And that's where you get that whole 70s dynamic, because martial arts was this new thing and Bruce Lee was so popular at the time that you could do a basic white belt kata and look like a badass.
And to the untrained eye, like somebody that's never done martial arts before, they would just be like, oh, that dude is a martial artist.
Yeah, he must be really tough. Meanwhile, I'm just sitting there watching. I'm like, yeah, that don't mean shit to me.
Right.
I can do that too.
Now, that's not to say that dude couldn't kill people.
Oh, absolutely not. It's just he's doing a basic ass kata and people are afraid of him.
Right.
But I like the way they portray the great Khali version of that character in the new school, because I wouldn't be afraid of that guy. There's nothing about him that scares me. Now, I love the fact that what was his character's name in James Bond? The metal mouth dude. I know his last name. He just passed away. I think it's Richard Kiel. But his character, he played a character in Dick Kiel. Well, Richard Kiel played he plays Samson in the original. And he died 6-7 years ago. My bad.
Yeah. Now that's a
Jaws.
Big...
Yeah, dude. Richard Kiel's a big freaking dude. Yeah. Now, Bob Sapp played the character that was along his lines in the new school one. He played Switowski. Yeah.
Well, it was also a Mr. Larson in Happy Gilmore.
Yes, he was Mr. Larson in Happy Gilmore. Yes, he was. And you know what? The Switowski character was like a combination of the Richard Kiel character and the one other guy that was throwing the he was throwing the bales of hay like it was nothing.
Yeah, right, right, right. Yeah, he was just like the ungodly strong guy.
Right. And I loved Bob Sapp's character because Bob Sapp is not a comedic actor. Bob Sapp is a huge guy. I would never want to laugh at Bob right. Sapp because Bob Sapp looks like he's going to kill somebody. And if you never had the chance to watch Blood and Bone with Michael Jai White, if you want to see Bob Sapp look really scary, watch some of his MMA matches over in Japan and watch the movie Blood and Bone with Michael Jai White. Bob Sapp is dangerous. So Bob Sapp's acting in the New School Longest Yard is amazing because it's totally different than how he's portrayed himself as a fighter in other film roles he's had. Because in other film roles, he's the big, scary monster. And this one, he's the big, lovable doofus.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I broke and did your toy. Which, that's another line that makes me laugh. Every time Switowski's on camera.
Yeah, he's great.
And he's deadlifting bleachers
right.
with people in them.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah.
Also, gotta love Terry Crews's Cheeseburger Eddie.
Oh my God. Every time I see Terry Crews in anything, I'm instantly a fan. I even like that horrible John Henry movie that he was in with Ludacris.
Yeah, I think Terry Crews is a national treasure. He's fantastic.
Hey, he's got the fries that'll crush your eyes.
That's right. And I love that these guys, like, and I'm talking Terry Crews and Bill Goldberg. I'm glad that they got out of the NFL before they got wrecked.
Yeah, because, Terry Crews left and became an actor. His first film role was The Sixth Day with Arnold Schwarzenegger, which is a very underappreciated Arnold Schwarzenegger action film. And Bill Goldberg, yeah, he got injured, stepped away from the football field, and became a phenom in world championship wrestling.
He was such a big deal. And that was sort of my last run with professional wrestling was the Bill Goldberg NWO days.
Right.
And what an exciting time to be a child watching the WCW.
Oh, dude, the Monday Night Wars from like, even like 94 when Hulk Hogan first jumped ship to WCW and then to when the NWO and Goldberg came out. That was an amazing time to be a wrestling fan.
It was Monday Nitro.
Yeah, Nitro was the WCW show. Raw was the WWF show.
Yeah, I feel like wasn't the difference, at least this was how I understood it as a middle schooler, that WCW was trying to present a more family-friendly version of, like, a more watered down maybe version of it?
Yes and no, because here's the thing. One thing you've got to understand about the differences between them, and I don't want to turn this into a rabbit hole of professional wrestling 101, but WCW was owned by Turner Broadcasting,
right,
which is a TV company. Yeah. They don't know anything about wrestling, so they're going by standards and practices. The WWF was owned by Vince McMahon, who was born into wrestling. So not only was he using his own money, but he knew how to do things and get around things and make things work. Then WCW was trying to copy WWF. But they were also presented differently in the fact that WCW was Southern wrestling. And there's a big difference between Southern wrestling and Northern wrestling, because that's from the territory days.
Well, that's all very interesting. I still want to get into some of the WWF stuff on Peacock. Also, one of my favorite wrestling entrance themes belongs to Goldberg.
Dude, his entrances were on point. Goldberg had the presence.
He wasn't
a good worker.
Right.
But he had the presence, and everything he did in the ring looked real.
For sure. Yeah, he was a very good performer.
Yeah, like I'm pissed off that we lost Bret Hart.
Yeah.
Due to you know, his actions.
Uh-huh.
You know, but I mean, Bret Hart isn't holding sour grapes on him anymore, so I think I can let it go.
You know who else I really liked to watch was Rey Mysterio Jr.
Dude, who's that jumping out the sky? R-E-Y, Mysterio, here we go. Yeah, dude, Rey Mysterio, back in the WCW days, man, Rey Mysterio, I remember thinking, why is that little kid wrestling?
Yeah, he was so little, but he was so, like, I loved whenever they would, like, put him up against the Giant.
Oh, God. And the Giant would just bench press him with one hand.
Right. It's so funny.
And apparently there is a story. You remember when they had Kevin Nash throw Rey Mysterio into the side of a trailer?
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently they got into a lot of trouble for that spot.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, the apparently the TV censors or whatever had a big issue with that, and they got into trouble. I don't really want to, you know, put over or, you know, whatever other podcasts, but I've really started going down the rabbit hole because I'm a big fan of the Conrad Thompson wrestling podcast, specifically Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard and What Happened When with Tony Schiavone.
Mm-hmm.
And I love hearing Tony Schiavone talk about the old days of WCW. And I love hearing Bruce Pritchard talk about the old days of, you know, the World Wrestling Federation. So if you ever get the chance and you get curious about some of these, like, I would check them out because they specifically, you know, to hear Tony Schiavone talk about Goldberg's rise and all of that. It's very interesting to hear insiders talk about.
Well, I know it was a lot of fun to watch it happen, especially as someone who was sort of in the target demo, you know?
Right, right, right. But it was great. It's great seeing a lot of these wrestlers in this film as well, because, you know, they're portraying characters on television. And, you know, to see them be able to portray different characters in a movie is so great because a lot of the times, you know, wrestlers going into acting see Hulk Hogan and No Holds Barred. It just doesn't translate well.
Yeah, it doesn't always work out. I want to talk, and this is, I think, probably the next logical step because what else can you really say about the two leads and the supporting cast? I mean, they're all great in their own rights. I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about the racial dynamics in both. I feel like we'd be remiss if we didn't touch on that.
Okay.
So in the original, and this I think also contributes to why people think the original was edgier. I would argue that it's, again, not edgier. It's just the part of the culture. And, you know, in the original, there's this long scene where they're sort of on the chain gang, right? Mm-hmm. And they bring in the black prisoners in a different truck because the populations were segregated, or at least transported separately.
Mm-hmm.
And they hook Crew up to a black inmate as punishment, right? Like, these are things that are missing from the remake. Now, there are definitely, like, there are racial issues in the remake. The guards use derogatory terms to try to, you know, bait the inmates in the remake. So it's present in both, but I would argue that just because we're sort of in slightly different places culturally, they sort of play differently.
Right. Like, I so wanted to punch Stone Cold Steve Austin in the face.
Yeah, well, he has a very punchable face.
He does. He really does. But no, you're absolutely right. And the racial overtone was a lot stronger in the 70s because, you know, keep in mind, you're in the Old South in the 70s where they're still in the 50s and 40s.
Yeah.
So... But I mean, but I think that the newer one did a good job as far as having the racial tones there, but not making it difficult to still be in on the movie.
Yeah, you know, because if I'm not mistaken, the Longest Yard remake was supposed to be set in 2005, right? Like, it wasn't set
correct. In the past. It was modern day. It was modern
day. Yeah, so it would make sense that the way that race is portrayed would be a little bit different.
Yeah, but I still like that we were still able to get that dynamic.
Yeah, because I think
in prison, that's the way it is.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I think that it was also important in terms of further demonizing the guards.
Right.
Especially in the 2005 version, because in the 70s, that was more or less a way of life. I mean, we were just coming out of the civil rights era, you know?
Right.
South, like you said, they would still sort of be stuck in Jim Crow days, like at least mentally. So in 2005, I feel like whenever the guards are calling the inmates the N-word, that for me, it carried much heavier of a punch.
In the
remake.
Yeah,
we're supposed to be past that by now.
Right. And you know that he's trying to bait him, but he also feels that way. This is how a white man plays guitar.
Right.
Like, okay. And what does that mean? Like, I'm still pretty sure Prince is a badass when it comes to playing guitar. Jimi Hendrix is amazing when it comes to playing guitar. What's your point?
Yeah.
But yeah, no.
Probably a Morgan Wallen fan.
Ah. I really, really enjoyed the guitar stylings of Lenny Kravitz did as well.
Oh, Lenny Kravitz could go. Oh, Lenny Kravitz can go, I should say.
Oh, absolutely. He can play pretty much every instrument.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's underrated in a big way.
He truly is. But I mean, I guess when you're Romeo Blue, that tends to happen.
Well, I'm just so excited to see what Zoe gets up to. You know, like, that's an artist for sure.
I really wish we were. Are we getting a season two of?
No, it got canceled.
Son of a.
I think it got canned because of the pandemic more than anything.
But I want a season two.
I know, it was very good.
It truly was, man.
Let's see. What else do you have on The Longest Yard? I mean, the films themselves are pretty cut and dry David and Goliath story. They end exactly how you would expect them to.
Yeah. Can I just give a shout out to the fact that original Unger is played by Crazy Ralph from Friday the 13th.
You can give that shout out.
I love the fact that Crazy Ralph is in The Longest Yard. Because every time he's talking, I'm just like expecting to hear, it's got a death curse.
You know, I think that the other thing that we probably need to talk about is the fact that Burt Reynolds is in the remake.
Yes, he is. And he's a lot more likable.
Yeah, and also, what a good choice, I think. We've talked a lot.
Nate Scarborough, yeah.
Well, we've talked a lot this summer about how to do remakes in a way that honor the original source material. And I think that this is a really good way of doing that.
Oh, I agree. And apparently I'm wrong. Original Unger was not in Friday the 13th, but I thought he was. He looks like him. He sounds like him. Or maybe the Internet Movie Database is just wrong. I think it's wrong.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
I'm looking. I'm doing a couple. Oh wow! I didn't realize that original Unger was in Cool Hand Luke as well. That's another film we've got to do sometime.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's Cool Hand Luke. No, apparently he was not. That wasn't him. But he looks just like him. He must be related to him or something.
Yeah, you know, whenever they attached that robot hand to Luke Skywalker, they should have been calling him Cool Hand Luke.
I think so. Because that metal is not warm.
It's not. Well, Luke. I mean, he does keep a glove on it, so maybe.
That's true. Okay, so Crazy Ralph was played by Walt Gorney. Walt Gorney looks just like original Unger.
Yeah.
But no, but I love the fact that, is it just me or did Burt Reynolds look better as an older man than he did as a younger man?
Gracefully. Him and freaking Tom Selleck, there's power in those mustaches.
I'm serious, man, because Tom Selleck is still rocking it hard in Blue Bloods.
Blue Bloods, but I've seen Tom Selleck recently in something. Oh, dude, you know,
Tom Selleck.
He walked into the Friends reunion. That's what it was.
Oh, I still have not watched that.
It's pretty good. It's actually pretty good.
All right, I'll give it a whirl.
It's interesting. I think like the most compelling parts of it, of the Friends reunion, is that they rebuilt all the sets, like with the original flats and everything. So they are the original sets. So they rebuilt all of them in the studios and so there are a lot of scenes where the cast is just like sitting on the old set just talking to each other without a host or anything. And those are like, I think, the most interesting and compelling moments of it.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. I mean, I'll give it a try.
I mean, it's, I mean, it was HBO Max knows how to do this reunion thing. Cause the Fresh Prince reunion was very good too.
Oh man. I was in happy tears and sad tears.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a good time. I like both of those. All right. So anything else that we want to say about The Longest Yard?
Which caretaker did you prefer, original or let's play that game. Let's look at the original versus the remake, okay, and which characters that you tended to gravitate more toward. You want to do a little bit of that?
Yeah, we can play that game. Right. You know, I feel like that's tough to me. And that's probably the hardest call because I like Rock in this movie more than I like him in a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not giving him too much to do, you know?
Yeah, he doesn't have to carry the film. This is an Adam Sandler film.
Right. And that's where Rock is good. Rock, I mean, that's where a lot of the Sandler crew is at their best, is in supporting roles, right?
Right.
Not
to say that Chris Rock can't carry a movie.
Have you seen it? Did you watch Spiral?
No, I did not watch Spiral.
I want to see that because it seems very different for him.
Oh, okay.
I do want to.
I
mean, it's a Saw. It's in the Saw universe.
Right.
And so it's a horror film, which would be interesting for Rock. So, yeah. So I don't know, because I also really liked the guy in the original.
James Hampton, a.k.a. Scott Howard's dad in Teen Wolf.
Yeah. But I feel like I have to give the nod. I think I have to give the nod to Rock.
I think so too, just for the fact that when caretaker dies each time, I think it hits me more that Chris Rock dies because he's been shown to be absolutely harmless all throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Where with the James Hampton version of caretaker, you don't know what the hell he was. You know what I mean?
And James Hampton, like his caretaker, was such a non-presence almost that I had a hard time even remembering that there was a caretaker in the original.
All right, what about Paul Cruz? We got Burt Reynolds 1970s versus Adam Sandler.
Yeah, see, I mean, I feel like you have to decide what the goal of this character is. Like, do you want him to be as unlikable as possible? Then I think that Burt Reynolds probably kills that. But personally, I think I enjoyed watching Sandler's more, as blasphemous as that will be to some people.
For me, I kind of feel the same way because with Burt Reynolds, you know the guy's a stud.
Yeah.
Like, he's Burt effing Reynolds.
Right.
But Adam Sandler, even when he was Happy Gilmore, I wasn't believing that he was tough. But this movie really made me see the physicality of Adam Sandler, specifically in the scene where Paul Crewe gets the 20-yard first down, when no one is blocking for him, I'm like, dude, Sandler's a badass when he wants to be.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there was a moment in time when Adam Sandler, I mean, much like Ben Stiller and other comedians, right, where Sandler was in pretty good shape.
Yeah. So you're giving this to Sandler?
I think, and I feel so weird doing that because here's an example of Sandler doing a really nice job in a movie that someone else wrote and directed.
Right.
Like, he's so bad in some of his own movies, but he's so good in other people sometimes. Like, this is, I feel like he does a really good job here.
I still haven't seen Uncut Gems, and I really want to.
It's good. It's like watching a movie with somebody else in it. It's crazy.
Nice.
He's so good.
Which Warden Hazen do you think is the biggest heel?
Now
Eddie
here,
Albert or Louis Skolnick's dad, aka Farmer Hoggett.
I think I have to go with
James Cromwell.
I feel like I have to go Eddie Albert.
Yeah, because Eddie Albert had that loving grandpa thing going.
Yeah,
and then he's just like this mean guy with like no heart. You know, like, you know who Eddie Albert, I swear, you can't tell me that Eddie Albert didn't get inspiration from the warden from Cool Hand Luke.
Yeah,
like, you can't tell me he didn't.
He just, I don't know what it was about him. It connected for me. Like he was evil, right? And that's what I said at the top. I feel like the guards in the original were worse than the guards in the remake, but I think the chasm that opens up between the humanization of the prisoners and the demonization of the guards in the remake is larger.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Because yeah, I mean they're
made to look more evil in the remake, even if they aren't as bad as they were in the original, if that makes sense.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. And I think what's kind of funny, and I realized this after I'm trying to think, who was it? We got a double dip of someone that was in a movie in the Space Jam movie that we just did. But also there was someone that was in The Longest Yard that was in the Space Jam movie, but I cannot remember who it was. And that's,
I agree with you. Me. Actually, I was just thinking last night that we were getting a double dip.
We really did too, but I cannot remember who it is. And that's just going to bother me. Oh, Jim Rome, because Jim Rome was in the original Space Jam. And then Jim Rome was in the remake of The Longest Yard.
There you go.
It was Jim Rome.
That's it. Yep.
Okay. What about Bernadette Peters's Ms. Toot versus Cloris Leachman's Lynette Gray? Which secretary did you like more?
All right, hold on to that. let me get them pulled up here so that I can accurately So first of all, Bernadette Peters could get it, right? Oh,
today, yesterday, tomorrow, next week, yes.
For sure. I just love Cloris Leachman. I thought she was so funny.
Yeah.
Right. And I also love the film footage of
oh, like, yeah, she's wearing the granny panties.
Right, that's so funny.
Dude, Cloris Leachman was so good at everything. Like, yeah. The older she got, the better she got. Dude,
for sure.
I'm looking at a picture of Cloris Leachman from 1970, man. She was hot.
Cloris Leachman was so funny on the Comedy Central roasts. And like she was like Betty White, who like at some point just like leaned into like the rude old woman role, right? Like,
yeah,
that you can get away with saying anything because you're like a cute old lady,
right? And I feel bad for saying that I think Cloris Leachman was hot back in the day, but I mean she was, man. I mean
facts is facts. Facts on facts on facts.
That's right. Like Cloris Leachman. It's one picture of Cloris Leachman that's on an internet movie database, and we just lost her back in January of this year. She looks like Sandra Bullock.
Let's see. Let's see if we can pull up.
Yeah, pull her up, bro.
Cloris. What a terrible name, though.
Yeah, that name hurts. But like she looked like she should be named like Abigail.
And you're looking at a picture of her from...
It's from 1970. As soon as you click her name, it's the main picture on her articles to the right.
Okay, hold on, let me get...
It says Leachman in a publicity photo in July 1970. And dude, she looks just like Sandra Bullock in this picture.
Yeah, it's not coming up for me for some reason. I see what you mean here with some of the classic shots.
Yeah, hold on. I'm gonna send you this picture. I'm gonna send it to you over Messenger.
Okay.
And tell me this is not like she does not look like she could be Sandra Bullock's mom.
Man, Sandra Bullock though, you know.
Sandra Bullock is so gorgeous.
Sandra Bullock and who else is it? Never mind. Selma Hayek is who I was thinking of.
Forget and about let's throw, it. And we can throw Julia Roberts out there for good measure.
Yeah, we could throw her anywhere.
Just
leave me with Selma Hayek.
All right, but you see that picture?
Hold on, yeah, I'm getting back over here to it now.
All right.
Oh, it's a Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Gorgeous. She looks just like.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that she was way funnier But Bernadette Peters is just, whew. It was just the hair that was killing it.
I mean, that just further points to the fact that, like, you can call the original a comedy, but it was more of a dramedy. Like, the new one was more of a comedy.
It was way more of a comedy.
Which is another reason why it probably feels less edgy, because it's funnier.
It really is. Like, all right, who do you think was worse? And I want your opinion. Mm-hmm. The Melissa character, who was Paul Cruz's girlfriend at the beginning of the original, or the Lena character played by Courtney Cox?
I think the OG girlfriend.
I mean, yeah,
is worse. Like, they were bad. They were terrible for each other, you know? Yeah. But I do think that Courtney Cox, I mean, all she wanted him to do was come down and be a part of the party. Now, she did want him to put on that stupid costume.
I would not have put that on.
Like, what is she wanted him to dress up like Daffy Duck or something? Like,
she wanted him to dress up like some little kid from the 40s the family photos.
Yeah. What was that? She brought out a full-on sailor costume for this guy. Like, he's an adult. Like, this is not a costume party. What was that outfit?
She was about trying to make him look better. Now, put on this costume. I'm like, who am I, Elton John? I ain't wearing that.
Right.
It would have been better if he said, who am I, Daffy Duck, though.
Yeah. Well, Daffy, no. Donald, yes.
Yes. Yes,
because Daffy is in the Daffy's a nudist.
He really is. Well, my Disney character, I ain't wearing that shit.
Yeah, I mean that thing. She brought that out. She's like, "Wear the outfit I got you." And I thought she'd bring out like a suit or something, but this, like, it really did look like she went to Party City.
Like, seriously, now if she was just gonna flaunt him around just to make fun of him, then I think that she's on par with being a horrible human.
Yeah,
man.
Because I can't think of another reason why she would have him wear that outfit.
Yeah, both of these characters are not nice, but I don't know. Part of me still kind of feels like, because the very first time I watched the original Longest Yard, I had bought it in a 2-pack with the new school one.
Yeah.
So, and it was the mutual domestic combat. Cause at least the first time that he gets physical with her, she's waking him up out of a sleep.
Yeah.
And I know that there's been times that I've been woken up out of a sleep and I just react.
And you're just startled. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm kind of willing to give him a pass, but then it just turned into, we're just going to like hit each other and grab each other by the face.
You know, also I think that the first indicator that there's a huge change, a huge difference in tone is in both of the Paul Cruises. Well, there's that. I mean, the remake starts with a Gwen Stefani song.
Oh, I always think that is a Madonna song, but it is a Gwen Stefani song. My bad.
But no, it's in there. It's in both Paul Cruz's first interaction with the police.
Yeah.
Paul Cruz interacts with the police at a bar and he's just a dick to them. Whereas Paul Crew in the remake interacts with them during a traffic stop. And it's hilarious.
It really is. But I still love the jokes like he had, but both of them, I love how they're throwing those jokes out at the short cop.
Right.
It's still so good.
Yeah.
Now look here, Mr. Frodo, don't get short with me.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's classic Sandler. And he's really good at delivering those kinds of lines too.
He really is. And I think it's also when you really want to look at what the goal is of each one, this goes to show, because we're each looking at a Paul Crew that's drunk, that's sort of being the life of the party, but you've got one that's just having fun while the other one almost seems like he's trying to antagonize.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's the big difference, that Sandler feels like he's having fun the whole time.
Yeah.
And Burt Reynolds felt like it was just a chore for him from beginning to end.
Right.
And that was just character choice, right?
Right.
That it's a chore to be alive at this point or whatever, right? But it just it makes the Sandler version of the character just a lot more fun to watch.
Really, it really is. And
this is not like Requiem for a Dream. We don't need it to be that serious.
No, but I think at the same token, I think that the Paul Crew of the 1974 OG I think that was a kind of the one we had to have because that was men at that time. That was how men handled these things.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right. So last one, because, you know, I know I don't want us to start beating the dead horse. Actually, the last two, mm-hmm. Unger, the original Unger played by the not crazy Ralph, and T-Bird from The Crow.
Let's see. Unger. I tend to lean like more OG for the guards and prison staff and more new film for the prisoners.
All right. Well, Unger was a prisoner.
Yeah. So I think this one's tough too, man.
Yeah, because they're both little rat snitches. And yeah. They're both horrible.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. This one didn't stick as much with me, I guess, as some of the others did.
Okay. Well, what about the Nate Scarborough character? Let's replace Unger with Nate Scarborough.
Yeah, so Nate Scarborough, I think I go with the remake on Nate.
Just because it's is it just because it's
I don't Burt think Reynolds it's just or? Because it's Burt Reynolds. I just really liked him in this part. I thought that he did a nice job. I thought that and maybe it was because I had just watched Burt Reynolds be an asshole for 2 hours that.
And now we get to see Burt Reynolds to be a nice old man.
Yeah. And maybe that's what it was, but I did enjoy him more in that role, I think.
All right. Fair enough.
And I think I enjoyed, if you want to ask me, like, do I prefer Burt Reynolds as Nate Scarborough or Burt Reynolds as Paul Crewe? I think I still take Nate Scarborough.
I do too. He's just way more likable. And yeah. I want to like Burt Reynolds. Like,
yeah.
I want my Burt Reynolds to be my Smokey and the Bandit Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, I want him on that like bearskin rug wearing those leopard print underwear.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I want my Burt Reynolds.
Chest hair just all 70s'd out as hard as you can.
That chest hair was just like, that chest hair could have been another person.
I mean, he's a Papa Bear.
He really is. Oh, man. All right, so the final one.
Yeah.
Did you like the Granny Granville character more? Because he's the first black character to cross the racial picket line.
Mm-hmm.
Or did you like the Nellie Earl Meggett character?
That's a tough one, I think. Because I really did like Nellie, but I also did like Granville too. But I just like Nellie's charisma in this. I also think that this is the only thing that Nellie could ever do in terms of acting.
Yeah, Nellie should not try to do anymore. Like Ja Rule was Edwin. Nellie should just, because they came out about the same time, Nellie should just be Earl and leave it alone.
Yeah, that's really it for him, I think. Because I did enjoy him in this.
I did too.
And it was probably a really cost efficient way for them to use a Nellie song on the soundtrack.
Right.
But yeah,
here comes the boom.
Yeah, I don't know, but I did like Harry Caesar as well as Granville. I thought that he was very good.
This is our second time with Harry Caesar in a film, Shane.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, you know the first time that we saw Harry Caesar.
Well, I'm gonna assume no, but if you'll give me a minute, I can probably tell you that it was definitely Breaking Two Electric Boogaloo.
Yep. He played Byron.
And I definitely remember who that was.
Yeah, he was the guy. He was the guy that ran Miracles.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Yeah, it's been about a year since we did. Well, it's been over a year now since we did Break Into as a part of last year's Shitty Movie Summer.
Yeah, that was a good time to be had.
It was. I think maybe that's what we do next summer, because I'm not sure that I'm good for two.
You don't want to do another showdown summer.
No, maybe we could do like a genre summer and just do like a sci-fi summer.
Okay.
Or something like that.
All right. Well, you know, we could always split next summer. We could do one half shitty movie, one half genre, and just go through the entire summer.
Yeah, or we could do Jump in July and do only jump rope competition films.
You know what? I think that we would really have a really interesting palette of films for that.
Right. Yeah, only films featuring a jump rope.
So most of the movies would end up being hood films, because, you know, most hood films, there's always a crew of black girls doing jump rope songs.
That's right.
You know what? I think, though, if we did do sort of a genre movie or like a sports or whatever, we should do some of those 80s skateboard movies, like Thrashin' and Gleaming the Cube.
What about Thrashin' 2 Electric Cube?
I would. Why don't we have an unlimited budget between the two of us to make these films?
Thrashin' 2 Electric Cubaloo?
Yes! In this film, we see Alan Wake, a.k.a. Christian Slater, go head-to-head against Thanos himself, Josh Brolin.
That's right.
I'm on board with that.
To save the community center.
Yes, but because if Josh Brolin snaps his fingers, it's going to turn to dust.
That's right.
Just the community center.
Yep, just every community center on the planet.
Yes, yes.
Because this version of Thanos is a commercial developer.
Why don't we ever have money to make these films?
Oh, that's such a ridiculous, like, you have to, and then you have to get the team together from every Save the Community Center movie ever.
Yes.
In order to come together to defeat commercial developer Thanos.
Yes. Like, we definitely have to get, what's his name again? We have to get, Weber Agnew.
Yeah.
Nick Weber Agnew. We have to get him. We have to get, John Cusack's character. We have to get
and you're gonna have to get the Boogaloo Shrimp.
Oh, the Boogaloo Shrimp has to be in on it. Are we still mad at him? Or are we indifferent?
I feel like we're indifferent. You never know what's going on with a guy, you know?
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
I'll give him a pass. It's fine.
I think so. No, that was the time of COVID. You know,
we it was. I mean, you know, like, who knows what was going on his end of things.
Yeah, I mean, he had things going on. For those that don't remember or
I don't even care, know if we ever talked about it.
No, basically, we were trying to get an interview with Michael, the Boogaloo Shrimp Chambers, to commemorate our Breaking Two Electric Boogaloo episode. And we just weren't able to connect with him. And when we were supposed to, he fell off the face of the earth, really. And
yeah, he just pop locked and dropped on out of our DMs.
Yeah. And then he came back like 2 weeks later. I was like, hey, sorry I disappeared, but I'm ready to do it now. And it's like, no.
I mean, honestly, maybe the dude had COVID. Who knows?
Well, I know that Adolfo Quiñones passed away of COVID last year.
Did he die of COVID?
I believe if it wasn't COVID, I think it was COVID. I'm not 100% sure, but I know he passed away last year. So that could have been a part of it.
The Shabadoo. Let's see.
And now I feel bad for being upset that like my hero didn't come on and talk to us.
I feel really bad now. Looking to see, he was 65.
I feel like such an entire prick now.
The cause had not yet been determined at the time of the report here.
Okay.
So I don't know. I mean, I feel like we would have known if it had been a. But you're right. Like at that time, whenever anybody died, I thought, oh, COVID got him.
Right.
Like even when I first saw the reports about Chadwick Boseman, before I like read the article, I was like, oh God, it got him.
Right. It's like COVID's just killing everybody off.
Because it did kill a lot of, you know, oh God, I'll never remember his name right now, but a couple of musicians that I really liked. John Prine. Died of COVID. I mean, like, yeah, it was a wild time. So I say we give him a pass.
I think so. I feel bad now. I feel like such an asshole. Like,
yeah.
I feel like a terrible human being.
You know, you're not awful.
I just have moments.
I mean, we all do.
Yeah, I have moments where I could be better.
Yeah. So speaking of people who could be better, let's get Bartender Smiley in here.
Yeah, let's see. You know what? I wonder if he has a bird named Ronnie.
I don't know. I'll have to ask him in a different segment.
The Plotaholics rating system for the movies is a pretty simple system. Basically, they rate movies based on how many shots it takes to get through them. So if you got a good movie and you get through it all the way sober, then it takes 0 shots to get through the movie. And then if you got a really bad movie, then it could take up to 5 shots to get through the whole thing. I think you can try to figure out the middle part yourself. So, what can I get you?
All right. I will go first, I guess.
Oakley doakley do.
So I'll go original and then remake. I guess that makes sense. The original was good. Like, I enjoyed watching the original, but it did feel overlong. Parts of it felt to drag a bit, especially some of the more, what I guess would be considered sort of comedic bits, just felt like it just went on and on. It's like that scene where Peter Griffin like hits his knee on the sidewalk,
and he just keeps going over and over and over.
Except I laughed at that the first time I saw it.
Yeah.
But the mud thing took so long. The game itself felt like it drug on for a long time. Burt Reynolds' character was not likable at all. His redemption didn't feel as earned. But still, like, I understand its place. And I think that it's a valuable film to watch, especially if you're a fan of sports films or prison films, because I still maintain that the original Longest Yard is really more of a prison film than it is a football film. The cast, yeah, is great. They do what they're supposed to do. It is, for the time, it's well shot. You know, the action is good enough. It just feels a little overlong to me. So I give the original Longest Yard a 2-shot rating.
Okay.
The remake, I think, is more enjoyable. I don't know that it's better. I enjoyed watching it more. Does that make sense? Is that a fair enough distinction?
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Like, for example, like The Godfather is a really, really great film, right? But I might have more fun watching Borat. You know what I mean? Like, it's that kind of thing where it may not be better, but I had more fun watching it.
Right.
And, you know, it made me laugh a few times. I think that the cast is really great. I loved the mixture of the, you know, professional wrestlers and ex-football players. And I thought that the prisoners, I really liked the choice to humanize the prisoners more in the remake. I thought that it played well. And I thought that the games and montages were shot a little bit smoother. Loved that Burt Reynolds had an opportunity to not play an asshole. So I give the remake a 1-shot, because it's still not without its problems. There are moments when it feels to drag. And there are some things in terms of its representation of homosexuality that is a little bit problematic when viewed through the lens of 2021. But otherwise, I thought that the remake was, like you said at the top, kind of a love letter to the original and improved on it in some ways. So yeah, a 1-shot for the remake.
All right. The one thing that I love about doing this show with you is one thing that I think, it's not a bad thing, it's just something that I've discovered over the last few weeks, is that we're usually on point with so much. We don't have a lot of contention.
Yeah.
We got to start doing movies where we're like on the total opposite spectrum of.
Yeah, I don't know what those would be,
though. Neither do I. Neither
I mean, I'm I. sure if we do this long enough, I'm sure we could do Lord of the Rings.
We could.
Oh, man.
Now, would you want to do the theatrical version or the extended cut?
I don't know that it matters to me. I've tried to watch it several times and fallen asleep in the first half hour.
What? You and Brian Jr., man, because I tried to get him to watch Lord of the Rings, and he made it about an hour and a half in, and then he just completely checked out. So I got him to watch The Princess Bride, and he was into that.
Yeah, I...
But he also wasn't into Willow either.
Yeah, I mean, the Lord of the Rings is the first one that comes to mind that is like a widely loved and acclaimed film that I just never really like got into. Like, that could be one. But then again, like, if I revisited it now with, you know, it'd be hard to look at it and find fault with it. You know what I mean? Like, it just is like, because, and this is what I try to do whenever I come on here. And I know that you're getting to your ratings, but
no, that's fine.
Like, I try to separate personal preference from quality judgments,
right?
Because like, I think that nostalgia can get in the way sometimes, and I think that just personal preference or like dislike for certain people or genres can get in the way sometimes. Like I'm not a big gangster movie fan, right? But I can still watch them and I can say objectively, like, this is well done, the story is good, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's probably why we meet in the middle more often, because we both view the films through that lens. It's something that we, I think, independently decided to do. And it's not necessarily, it wasn't, I don't think that we set out in the show to do it that way. But it's just sort of what we've defaulted to. If we decided to just go just purely opinion, then it would be more contentious. But I don't know that the world needs more contention right now.
No, it really doesn't. I'm over contention. And I don't do contention very well.
Yeah, I think that's it for me too, is I just really don't. I mean, like, I'd much rather just find common ground.
Exactly. And I'd rather not fuss about something that I love. And I don't want to fuss about something that I love doing. I love reviewing film.
Yeah. And sometimes I come in here and I'm ready to fight, and I expect that you will fight me. But then I'm more often than not surprised that we share the same opinion. And then it, like, all of that animosity or whatever, or I guess tension just kind of like goes away because we're both sort of in the same corner.
Right. So with that being said, this is only my second time watching the original Longest Yard. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you the truth. I did not like it when I first watched it. I fell asleep during it. So this time, because I looked at it as, well, now I'm working.
All right.
And I went into this with a fresh set of eyes, and I'll tell you the truth, I did have fun with the OG one. It's obviously not without its problems. It goes entirely too long. That mud, the muds in the pants scene is just, oh my God. It's like they tried to take what was able to ingrain Cool Hand Luke with his fellow prisoners in the film Cool Hand Luke, and they try to do it here, and it just falls apart. And it's just, it's not very good at all. It takes too much time. But it has that gritty grindhouse 70s film feel, which I do appreciate and I do enjoy. That Maserati was an ugly ass car, though.
Yeah,
it was. It seriously looked like a penis with a freaking cyst on it. It looked like the hammer. It really did. Like, that car deserved to be driven into the bay. The football scenes felt very, very dated, like the serpentine of the line going up to the line of scrimmage, the drop kick stuff, the styles of the field goal kicking. It's so dated, and the uniforms look just horrible, but it's a good time. The COs aren't even, the one thing that I especially like is that other than three of the corrections officers, they're a collective unit. They're not individual characters. You have Captain Knauer, you have the walk-in boss, and you have Bogdansky. And that's it. So, I mean, it's not terrible, but it's not comedic. It's way more just, it's a dramedy. It's a prison dramedy. That's all it is. So to try to put it off as a comedy really does it a disservice. But I'll give this film, I have to give it a 2-shot rating, because there's no way this is a middle of the road film.
Right. It's better than that.
It's way better than middle of the road film. So you almost have to give it a 2-shot rating. Because it also does everything that it's supposed to do very, very well. As far as the remake goes, this is still Adam Sandler's coming toward the end of his peak, but we still remember why we loved him 10 years ago at this point.
Yeah.
The combination, as you said, of the former NFL players and the professional wrestlers. Dude, Bill Romanowski, they just told him, be yourself, and he did. Kevin Nash was probably one of the most unsung heroes of the film, because he just proved how funny he is. And if Rob Zombie does not pick Kevin Nash to be Herman Munster in his Monsters film, I'm probably not going to see it.
That would be really good.
But I mean, everyone that was in this film, they were chosen for a particular reason. They weren't asked to do more than to be the best version of themselves. And that's what they did. And even though it's not without its problems, I give it a one-shot rating as well. The Brucey character is also among my favorite characters. I still will tell people when something's going on, I get excited. I'll go, it's Brucey's time to shine, baby. You know, and like Nicholas Turturro he's one of the most unsung national treasures ever. Yeah. So one shot rating for the Adam Sandler Longest Yard.
Yeah. And, you know, it should be noted that we never discuss this stuff before we get on here. It's always just kind of works out that we're in the same ballpark. Yeah.
Yeah. It just happens this way. We have never, ever. One thing, this is a rule that we had to let you guys behind our curtain. When we first decided to do this show, we made it a point that we would not talk to each other about any film that we're reviewing.
Yeah.
Ever. We never talk about it until we do it now. So, yeah. Shane doesn't know how I feel about a film unless I text him and I'm like, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah. And honestly, like, that's when it's a movie that I've loved a long time and I still don't reveal how I feel about it necessarily. So, yeah. So that is going to do it for Showdown Summer. I guess we should go ahead and touch on this. The Longest Yard, the original, was made on a $2.9 million budget and made $43 million at the box office. The remake, an $82 million budget with a $191.5 million box office. The original Longest Yard is now sporting a 79% on the tomato meter with only 34 reviews. It is an old film after all. The new Longest Yard, a 31% on the tomato meter with 170 reviews. I think that's unfair, but you know, it is what it is.
Yep. You know what? We went to go see Snake Eyes.
Yeah.
On Friday. And I put this in our Fandoms United group. If you're on Facebook, go to your search bar and put in Fandoms United. If you want to get in on some of our thoughts about all things geeky fandom. Yeah. Film, television, whatever. And as a fan of the G.I. Joe cartoons as a kid, I liked Snake Eyes.
Yeah, I've heard. I mean, in general, I think Snake Eyes has been pretty well received, especially when it's put up against the other G.I. Joe movies.
The only G.I. Joe movie that I think might be better is the 1987 G.I. Joe the movie.
Yeah, but none of the like Channing Tatum ones.
Oh, God, no. God, no. No, right. This one is awesome. They picked one of the five most popular Joes and made a movie centered around him, and it was amazing.
Yeah, that's cool, man. I'm going to have to take a gander at it myself.
Absolutely should.
But next week, Brian, we will be shifting gears a little bit as we start to work our way toward fall. Next week, we'll be discussing the Street Fighter film.
Yeah, the 1993-94 Jean-Claude Van Damme film Street Fighter.
So that should be super fun and not a drag at all.
You know, I am anticipating Shane Wilson to be so mad at me when we record this episode, everybody. Like, his head is gonna hurt.
Well, I mean, it can't be worse than No Holds Barred, which is the most angry I've ever been at you. And you called my mama her one time.
I did. I would never. Are you saying that I did that? Disrespect Mama Wilson?
No, you did not disrespect Mama Wilson. No, you did not. No one in my immediate vicinity has ever called Mama Wilson a hoe.
I'm pretty sure that if anyone did, Mama Wilson would be whooping that ass.
Well, Father Wilson definitely would be whooping that ass. For sure. And he's got Southern old man strength. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like that's a whole different kind of strong.
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine.
He still likes to muscle up on people when he shakes their hand. You know how some guys will do that? Like,
Yes, to get boop, that grip,
and then
in.
Just like grip it. Oh my God, this dude!
He worked, hey, how's it going?
I mean, he worked maintenance on paper machines for his entire life. He's got a grip, bro.
I love it.
But anyway, man, we will get on with street fighting next week, and until then, we will talk to you later.
Take care, guys.
Take a trip with us to Nilbog. Just promise not to drink the goo.
Oh my God!
If you get sucked into the Matrix,
Matrix,
we will send the phone for you.
Do you believe in fate?
Sometimes the end game is the perfect place to start.
We're in the end game now.
And other times you want to pretend the prequels were never a real thing. Let's just pod race to the end.
It's working!
Every movie has a plot hole, and every hole is filled somehow. Whiskey, wine, or blue milk. Just don't cut me off right now. We're the Plotaholics. A breakfast club or two. We are the Plotaholics. Ripping plots apart for you. Shane and Brian are an island. Two real life misfit toys. Wanting to be a RoboCop.
Thank you for your cooperation.
Settling for black circle boys. And just like Dr. Hammond, extracting amber from wood.
And later there's running and then screaming.
A little too busy asking if we could, and never asking if we should. But every movie has a plot hole, and every hole gets filled somehow. With whiskey, wine, or blue milk. Just don't cut me off right now. We're the Plotaholics. A breakfast club of two. We're the Plotaholics. Ripping plots apart for you.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.